Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of Do I Have Your Attention? My name is Avery Boyd, and I'm starting a new show all about getting to know the business owners, public leaders, and public servants of your city. This first season is focused on the city of Phoenix. We have spent about a month and a half talking to several different business owners, trying to get their input on how they think, how they move, the decisions they made, and more importantly, what they think about the city they live in. For this first episode, I had the great opportunity of speaking with Peter Hunt, the owner of Reverendry. He actually owns several different real estate companies, but this episode is focused on Reverendry here in Phoenix, Arizona, and his personal life in general. I hope everybody enjoys. Stay tuned. We have more people to come. Thank you. Why don't you introduce yourself and explain kind of your company?
I'm Peter Hunt. I'm a licensed real estate broker in the state of New York. We own I'm principal owner of a real estate company that also owns a mortgage banking firm, a title insurance agency, and also a property and casualty insurance agency. We also built some houses in New York State, and we also have a commercial business, and we own some commercial properties as well. So we have a property management company, a joint venture. We've been in business, my family is, since 1911. I'm third generation. My son represents the fourth generation. We started in 1911, so we have 108 years coming up. So
that's awesome. So you mentioned New York. Mm-hmm. What brings you to Phoenix?
That's a long story. I'll keep it short. I got involved with a joint venture on a real estate company.
Okay.
And my partners went bankrupt. And so I wound up having to pick up the pieces, and they filed for personal bankruptcy, so I effectively took over the business 100%, which meant that I was going to be here a little bit more. So we wound up buying an office building here for one of our branches, and I wound up buying a couple condominiums, and I like it here very much. So, so I come every month,
okay,
between, say, 3 and 7 days, sometimes longer in the spring when it's really ugly back east.
Speaking about this business in particular, it's Reverendry, right?
Reverendry.
I was reading about it online. It seems like a really good idea, especially since I've been through the lending process. Can you explain the process a little bit?
Sure.
And then talk about how you make money since you give a lot of the services away for free.
Mm-hmm. Well, technology is an interesting thing, and you're familiar with technology from your engineering background, and how technology can make things more efficient.
Yep.
In our industry, it hasn't made things very efficient.
Yeah.
But when we started looking at the business a few years ago, we started looking at the way the relationship between a real estate company and the real estate agents was evolving. Here in Phoenix, it had evolved already. This is the home of the 100% concept. So it already had evolved to a point where the agents were getting the lion's share of the commission, virtually 100% of the commission. Then the real estate company charges the agent fees for this, that, and the other thing, technology, office space, whatever they can charge them for.
Mm-hmm.
Transaction fees. They just fee them to a point where they can actually might make a profit. But the services that the real estate company actually provides have been squeezed down to almost nothing. So we came into this market as a full-service real estate company. We're a company that actually provided services, which means that we have to get some of the share of the commission to fund those services.
Yeah.
Well, what we found is it was very difficult to grow our organization here like we are in other regions. We're in Massachusetts and New York, and it's more of a traditional climate there where there's a business relationship between a company and a real estate agent that's somewhat fair. Here, it's totally lopsided towards the agent. So as we looked at how technology had improved the industry, much of the technology was geared towards trying to get the agents to use systems to make the agent more efficient.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, though, you have this whole system of information exchange called the multiple listing service that was very, very efficient and very reasonably priced because the cost of it is spread over so many people. So when we broke down the actual cost to list a house, we found that it was almost nothing. So and if couple that with the fact that the agent's getting 100%, now you say, well, what's the agent really doing to sell that house. Because if you ask a seller, what do you think a real estate company does for you, or a real estate agent, they'll say they put it in the MLS, mm-hmm. they put it on websites,
yeah.
maybe they hold an open house, and they put a sign in front of your house. Maybe, you know.
Yeah.
All that costs almost nothing.
Nothing, yeah. not the 5% you have to pay.
Not the 5 or 6%. Yeah. So the incremental cost of the next listing is really zero, mm-hmm. close to it. So we said, you know, I'm literally lying awake one night thinking about this. What if we put a business plan together where we gave away a listing? Because the real value of a listing is to generate leads.
Yeah.
Now, so you secure the listing. If a customer must call the real estate company to get access to that information or to see the house,
yeah.
or call, you know, they usually call the agent direct, but if there's no agent involved, we have no agents here.
Yeah, they call us.
We then put them directly in touch with the seller, mm-hmm. and they can go over and see the house if they want to see it. The likelihood of them buying that house is pretty small.
Yeah.
People generally don't buy a house, first house they call on. Or even the 10th house.
Yeah.
They want to go out and look at
look
houses.
At it,
it's
look
a,
at
it's
it,
the beginning yeah. of a process. So we call them back, and if they want to see more houses, we refer them to a real estate agent aligned with my other company.
Okay.
Okay. And so then that company then pays Revenry a referral fee.
Okay.
So that's one way that we generate revenue.
Yep.
We also have service packages that a seller can buy.
Okay.
If you want to list it for free, you take your own pictures, for mm-hmm. example. There's pretty good cameras right on this phone. You can buy a relatively inexpensive digital camera. It takes beautiful pictures, right?
Yeah.
Then you upload them, and everything, you can do everything on our website. You never have to talk to a human being. You can do everything right on our website, which is beautiful. But when we look at the pictures, then we review the listing, you know, make sure everything's right.
Mm-hmm.
And also we want to make sure the guy owns the house.
Yeah.
I mean, I could list my neighbor's house, I suppose.
You got to check that.
You invited me over and I took pictures while we were having cocktails or something.
Yeah.
So anyway, once we verify the information, we look at what's there, and a lot of times these pictures aren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
So for a relatively modest price, $350, we'll send out a professional photographer and we do a bunch of other things for you too. Very cheap.
Yeah, that is
very
cheap. It's usually
and then you can upgrade to drone photography if you want, and you
okay.
can. And then we've got, and depending on the value of your home, we have what we call our mansions program, which is for properties over $750,000.
Okay.
And then we have the next big hurdle for the seller, though, is once I get a contract, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
So he can you know, handle himself, call title agency, do whatever he wants, or we can handle it from start to finish. We call it contract to close. We charge for that also.
Okay.
So there's, but you as the seller can select exactly what you want. It's not one big fee, and you hope all this
and
stuff.
And hope it's all included.
Yeah, hope it's all.
Yeah.
And think about this too. I agree to, as a seller, I agree to pay a big fee,
mm-hmm.
6%, 5%, whatever I agree to. If you have had your license for one day, I'm going to pay you about the same as I'm going to pay somebody who's a 10-year expert.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not a good system. If you went to a lawyer. And you, the guy just got out of law school.
Yeah.
Would you want to pay him
your
partner's fee?
No.
No. You don't talk, and plus, if you got a problem, you want to talk the best you can. Now, if it's a minor thing, you know, just fix a parking ticket or something like that.
Yeah.
The associate's fine, and you pay him as little as possible.
Yeah.
But if you've got, you know, you got arrested for something, you want the best guy in town.
The best guy.
And you're not going to quibble about the price, right?
Nope.
But that's going to be a lot more than that new associate.
Okay.
So our industry, everybody gets paid the same. That's silly if you think about it. Particularly if a seller or buyer knew that the agent was getting 100% of that commission, do you think they'd hold them to a higher standard?
Yes, they would.
But the customer doesn't know that.
No.
They think they list with an agent who is aligned with the real estate company, and the real estate company's got to be doing something to sell that house, right?
Or, yeah, because well,
they're in business,
this is what they do, they must have it.
They
got to
be doing something,
yeah.
right? Well, in most cases, they're doing almost nothing. And the agent, based on the system that as it now exists through technology,
yeah.
also is doing almost nothing. And in a hot market like we've had, where listings don't take a long time to sell,
yeah.
let's say I list your house today, and there's four buyers waiting to buy a house on your street, and they come in the first day, and one of them buys your house.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
There's no work from you. Yeah.
I mean, what have I done? Nothing.
Exactly, yeah.
And yet, I'm obligated by the contract that you signed with me to pay you, you know, a big fee. So we've tried to strip away the cost and deliver the benefit to the seller, okay, while retaining the relationship with any potential buyer. Now, if the buyer buys the house that they call on, God bless them.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy. Because that now that seller who's listed with Revenry is saved twice. Not just once, but twice.
Because
every commission has two pieces to it. You've got the listing portion and the buying portion. And it's roughly split right in half.
Yeah.
So if you list your house for 6%, 3% is going to go to the buying broker, 6% is going to go to the listing broker. So.
Awesome.
So we think we've got a unique position in the marketplace. There's a bunch of low fee companies like Purple Bricks. They charge $3,600. There's a bunch that charge $3,000, and there's these guys that charge $500. We don't charge anything if you want the basic package. And from that point, you can pick and choose what you want.
Awesome. So it sounds like, well, I'm listening from all your other stuff, you're really good on risk sharing. Mm-hmm. And that's an ideology as I own properties, right? Something mm-hmm. goes down here, you want to be able to have coverage overall. Can you talk about that a little bit in terms of your business and also in terms of the Phoenix market as for the future?
Well, we've this is our seventh startup
that I've
been involved with. And so we try to calculate the risk. Mm-hmm. I would say in terms of the net investment, this may be the biggest risk that we've taken. But it's also, in my mind, the biggest gain. Because if we're right, we're going to revolutionize the industry. At least a portion of it. Not 100%, but a portion of it. And that's okay with me. Phoenix, we selected Phoenix because it's a big market. It's big enough that there's room for us to experiment with something like this without... catastrophe. If let's say we're in a market, and this is the sixth or seventh largest market in the country right mm-hmm. now. So there's, and it's really, it's a series of markets, as you know. I mean, you've got the Southwest Valley, you've got the Northeast Valley, you've got the Northwest Valley, you've got the city itself, and they're kind of all in various stages of development. Mm-hmm. But they're all developing. You've got 1,000 net new people coming into this market every week. I mean, that's pretty huge.
Or more.
And anyway, the good news about all that is that there's room, and that's what I like about Phoenix. There's room to grow. It's kind of a sprawling city, which is good, bad, or indifferent depending on your ecological frame of mind. But it's a sprawling city, which means that you can go into a pocket of the marketplace and try your idea out in that pocket and see how it grows.
Yeah,
we're located in the city on purpose because we want to be able to service the whole region. And if we're right with the way this works, we're already licensed in Tucson and in Prescott. If we're right, we could get licenses all over the country and still function from here.
Yeah.
And Phoenix is a business friendly environment, unlike New York State, which is business unfriendly.
Yeah.
So we like it here from a business standpoint. We like it here from a geographic standpoint. We like it here from a weather standpoint. We like it from a demographic standpoint. It's people come here for a good reason. They come here to get a job. They come here to retire. They come here because of the weather. They don't come here to get away from the rest of the world. Florida is kind of an escape.
You've got
lots of people that are kind of losers that couldn't make it someplace else. And then you got a lot of rich people that live among other rich people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, this is a very diverse, friendly community. And it's a very welcoming. I find that, wherever I go in this community, people are very open to new people.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you look like. It's pretty nice place.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you feel like things like AI, autonomous vehicles, all that would help your business?
Oh, yeah.
Hurt it?
Oh, yeah. We have a bunch of ideas we want to explore along those lines. For example, we have something we call the agentless showing. Now, right now, you want to look at a house, you call an agent. Agent shows you the house.
Mm-hmm.
There is one of the other companies in town is experimenting with this. I think it's Open Door or something like that, where there's an electronic entry into a house and that kind of thing. We think that's not the greatest thing in the world. It works right now, but it's, in my mind, not terribly efficient. We're working right now with some technology companies to develop a secure way for someone to walk away from their house and allow a complete stranger to come into their house, mm-hmm. knowing that they're perfectly secure with no agent. And so that's one of the things where technology will definitely improve the process. On the selling side...
Quick question on that. Mm-hmm. With that, so I've done like the keyless entries, right?
Yep.
I feel like it's good for me because I'm doing the investor thing, so sure. I know what I'm looking for. I know what.
Yep.
But for somebody who needs the shelf, right? They're buying their first house. Mm-hmm. They might have just had a kid or just got married. They kind of lose the whole picture that's painted by the real estate agent. Are you guys thinking about implementing something with that?
Definitely thinking about that because the keyless entry or whatever, however they call it, you know, where you walk in, you know, it's up to you. In our image, there's an automated agent effectively that's talking to you about the house,
okay,
and telling you about where you are and what you're looking at. That's providing some color to the environment. For example, describing the type of wood that might be on the floor or around the fireplace, or whether it's plaster or drywall construction, something that you we might be able to sense if you know what you're doing. But mm-hmm. The average buyer looks at a house every 10 years. They don't look at it all the time. They're not constantly looking to invest. They're looking for a home, not for an investment necessarily. So yes, we want to add a lot more color to it. We want to add a lot more vibrancy to it, so it's a real experience as opposed to. I mean, think about going to Disney World and those automated rides. Okay, mm-hmm. I mean they're virtual reality stuff. I mean, I think some real estate organizations are banking on that. I think that's a little bit out there for now. People still want to go over to the house.
Yes.
And because every product in our business is unique. Mm-hmm. And there's only three products in the world where you are not required to accept a substitute. In other words, you buy a house today, and you say, something's wrong with this house. Would you give me another one just like it? It's impossible.
Yeah.
Okay. The other ones are violins and diamonds. Believe it or not, I can't be required if I don't like the violin. I can't be required to accept a substitute because everyone's considered to be absolutely unique. Just like in real estate, you can't put, even if you cannot duplicate the structure, mm-hmm. it's going to be on a different piece of land. Yeah. And there's going to be something different about that land. No two lots, even if they're next door to each other, are exactly the same.
Yep.
So that's the color piece. That's what you have to make personal. Mm-hmm. And that's what we think we can do, not today or tomorrow, but we think we can do through technology as we evolve.
Okay. Now let's expand a little bit nationally. I know Phoenix is a big market, right? You got downtown that's building every day, yeah. Scottsdale that's doing good for a while. South Phoenix is even coming up. They're building new stuff out there. Do you see the same level of growth that you guys are trying to target in other parts of the country?
No. This is one of the perennially fastest growing communities in the country.
Okay.
There are other fast growing communities. And certainly Phoenix has had its cycles.
Yeah.
I mean, and some have been pretty deep and some pretty high, so it's, but what we like about this kind of market, Phoenix in particular, is that it always comes back better than it was before. Now, we're just getting back right now to where we were before the recession.
Crash, yep.
So it's been a long haul, 10 or 11 or 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a particularly great experience, and if going back to where I'm from, upstate New York, we never had a big dip, but we never had any increase either. Yeah. Like anything like this, it's been pretty flat. So there are other markets like Phoenix, Houston would be a market that would look something like this. Las Vegas, although it's a different. It has a totally different kind of character to that marketplace. It's becoming a more permanent market, where it was used to be, largely a temporary, you go there for a while and you leave.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of California look something like Phoenix, but California is overregulated and overtaxed, and Phoenix is neither, which is beautiful. Texas, I think, would be the closest comparison, perhaps Georgia, Atlanta. Even parts of Louisiana are very Tennessee is another place that where you've got very, very favorable taxes, you've got a friendly climate, and you've got growing kind of exciting cities, Nashville, Raleigh-Durham, Charlotte. I mean, these are pretty dynamic places. So there's other places where this kind of concept, we want to be in a fast-growing market. We want to be in an exciting market. We want to be in a young market. That's another thing about Phoenix, which is often not talked about enough. Look at the investment that's taking place at Arizona State. I mean, it's massive, and it's all around there, too. I mean, it's really jumping. I mean, just since we've been here, you know, that's radically transformed. Radically. All around there's radically transformed. Which is huge, and so you've got, and a university system like that is an enormous economic engine, because you've got research, you've got young people, you've got they're spending money. The spillover effect is huge, and the other thing about Phoenix that's really kind of interesting is the medical infrastructure. Mayo Clinic, you've got huge investment in medical infrastructure.
Aetna, CVS, Banner Health, all these things are right here.
And this is monstrously huge because once you have the infrastructure, now the whole community is vested in whatever, and they're gonna, if they got a brain in their head, the politician can do everything they possibly can to make sure that those investments provide a return for the whole community.
Yeah.
And a university has a huge, huge, huge reach in terms of impact on a community, like a hospital system does too.
All right. Two more points. Yep. You mentioned that we were just getting close to the height of where we were before the recession. Mm-hmm. Right.
That's just average value.
Yeah, average value. Do you think that would make anybody tentative or like more aggressive in terms of being active?
Nobody wants to be the last guy to pay the highest price. Okay? Nobody wants to do that. And I think there's a feeling of that all around the country right now. It's not just here. Mm-hmm. So the high end of in all markets across the country is weak right now. So the high end here is going to be a little weak. So we're going to see, you know, once you get over $1 million in this community, you know, it's going to take, it's a different market than the, say, the $200,000 to $500,000 market. Yeah. That's pretty stable. Prices will continue to incrementally grow. But we're not going to see 10, 15, 20, 30% growth like we did in some of the years between 2012 and 2016, let's say. I mean, there was some incredibly rapid skyrocketing growth. I mean, 20, 30%. I mean, where does that happen? Well, it happens when you were down as far as we've gone. So you've got a lot of way
to
go.
You have to come back.
Because inherently, you're not going to take away the sunshine. You're not going to take away, you know, days like today, 65, 70 degrees, you know, a few clouds in the sky, but it's beautiful out there. It's just beautiful.
Or proximity, you got Vegas, that's 5 hours away.
You've got the Grand Canyon, you've got Sedona, you've got Mexico.
There's a lot of
Tucson, you've got, even New Mexico's right there, you know. There's and the mountains all around here are spectacular, you know, it's just so much.
It is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Also, do you feel like the political climate will affect any of these decisions, both personally, professionally, and just in Phoenix in general?
The national political climate?
Both the federal and state.
I'm learning about the local political situation. I don't know as much about it as I would like to know. And I'm kind of a junkie when it comes to the study of government. That was my major, and I'm constantly reading and listening and talking to people. I do a radio show myself in Buffalo every Saturday, and I interview our politicians, our business people, and it's on real estate, but everything affects real estate.
Yeah.
So locally, I think what I do sense is that local politicians are smart enough not to screw it up.
Okay.
I think they know what works, and what works here is to you know, kind of the core American way. I mean, give people the opportunity to do something right and they'll do it. You know, give the opportunity to somebody to get a good job or to start a business like you've done. I mean, give somebody opportunity and leave them alone, you know.
Yeah.
In New York State, they drive you crazy. here they leave you alone.
Yeah.
So I sense that the political climate is wise enough, the politicians are wise enough to to let things happen as organically and naturally as they can. And I see a lot of that here. It's a very attractive place to bring a business. The national climate, you know, is a different story. I think a lot of things happened. I mean, you can criticize his style, and I don't think anyone would take issue with it. But the net effect of what happened with the tax cut, for example, to corporations has been huge in terms of creating wealth in this country. I'm concerned that if the Senate goes the other way, or if the president loses in 2 years, that the reaction would be very negative, because there's constant feeling in this country. It's been there forever. It's in every country, of jealousy or hatred for the wealthy class, whatever that's determined to be. And any and because it's such a small percentage of the population, they're an easy target. So let's take from the wealthy to support everybody else. Yeah. Well, you know, they forget the fact that anyone with wealth, the ripple effect of their wealth in the rest of the economy is huge.
And, it's huge.
And it's much more efficient for that wealthy person to disperse their own wealth than it is for the government to take it and have it chewed up in Washington.
Yeah. The other point is that people don't realize is that a lot of people have made their money by knowing what to do with it, right?
Yep.
And if you give it to people who don't know what to do with it, then they'll give it right back to the same people who knew what to do with it, right? So it's not, you might have even the playing field for 10 years, but and 50, right, still lopsided. So the education is way more important than just...
Yes, absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, I'm concerned because, first of all, we're in what's called a late cycle here, and in the economy as a whole, and no up cycle lasts forever, and you know you've got certain factors right now that are not particularly helpful to extending that. Having said that, the dynamic is extremely powerful right now. You've got very low unemployment, record low. You've got highest employment among minorities and disadvantaged populations within this country that we've ever seen, ever. Mm-hmm. You know, and so these are very, very good things. And you've got more business coming onshore than we've had in a long time. The tariff situation is problematic, but it's also creating an environment where it's making more sense to keep jobs in this country. And my fundamental belief is if people have a job, they're going to be more vested in their community. Yeah. If they're more vested in their community, they're going to want to buy real estate. I think, you know, to think that we're going to get past 64-65% total home ownership in this country is probably unrealistic, and that's fine, because you've got in that 35%, you've got the elderly that have aged out of owning a home, you've got young people that may not be ready to own a home, and then you've got 10% or so of the population that's are what we call chronic tenants.
Yeah.
They're just never going to own a home. They're not good homeowners. They don't
want
it.
They don't want the responsibility. They don't
want
it.
Any
of that.
So it's an interesting time right now, I would say, in general. I think we've got, you know, at least a year, maybe two or three left in a relatively boom cycle. You know, you've got antsy, nervous equities markets right now. I mean, you go up 500 and you go down 800. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah.
I mean, all it was about was something the president tweeted, you know, an interview. I mean,
interview, a comment.
It's crazy stuff. I mean, to think that it would be that volatile. Now, one guy was on Financial News this morning. He was a trader. He said, first of all, volatility isn't that volatile, because 800 points on, you know, 25,000 is not all that much. It's 2-3%. But he said, but it's really good for us traders, because they make money all over the place.
No matter what, right? They make money. Yeah.
You know, and there's still a lot of cash on the sidelines right now in the markets. So, and you're seeing some very smart, very wealthy investors pulling, part of this is pulling some money out of the market and sitting on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. And it will sit there until they want to buy back in.
Yeah, when it drops again.
And then the market goes back up. So it's a very interesting time.
So what would you say that you guys are doing to put yourself on the offense in that sense? Right, well, because
here's what we're doing.
The money doesn't go away. No, just switches no, hands.
No, what we want to do, buying stocks is like buying real estate in many mm-hmm. cases. You know, you don't want to buy at the high and sell low. You want to buy low and sell high. I mean, you know what that's about. So we think that even if there is a down cycle, it's going to be buying opportunity.
Yeah.
And if there is a down cycle, there's going to be pressure on the Fed to reduce rates. So, you know, it's going to be an opportunity for those people that do have a little cash. So, and that's always the case. The last time around, I mean, basically it created a whole new industry, these house buying companies. Blackstone is one of the largest owners of real estate, single family homes in the United States. I think they may be the largest now. You've got a company called Pretium, which operates here in this community as Progress Realty.
Okay.
And they raised $1.2 billion in July just to buy single family homes. So once those guys buy houses, and they're competing with you,
yeah.
once they buy a house, they don't buy it to fix it and sell it like Open Door does.
Mm-hmm.
They buy it to hold it. Open Door, OfferPad, these are flippers. They're basically, you know, big flippers.
Yeah.
And because, you know, they're not in the business of owning real estate. Now, but the companies around them, other big money companies like Blackstone, even Starwood, these companies are in the business of buying it, and they're looking at companies like Open Door and OfferPad to create opportunity for them, and they are. There's no question about it, because basically they take out OfferPad and Open Door are middlemen effectively, but if they're early on in the cycle of that ownership, you know, they might be able to get a better buy. Because everything is a matter of how long you have to own the property if you're a flipper and how much you have to invest.
Exactly.
And so if you can limit your investment and limit the time that you own it, your upside gets better. And these guys come in and they do that work,
mm-hmm.
the Pretiums of the world. And they want to buy 30,000 houses this year. 30,000 houses. Now, communities like Phoenix have gotten kind of wrung out. There's not a lot of inventory available. During the recession, there was lots of inventory available.
Yeah.
And the investor market was probably, 50, 60, 70% of the market. But those were mostly small-time investors. Mm-hmm. People coming in from Canada or other parts of the country and saying, you know, I want to buy three houses this weekend. Because it was half price.
It was good, yeah.
It was a half price sale, so.
All right. Okay. To that point, you mentioned new businesses were created out after the recession, and we were kind of living in some of the most prosperous times. What do you think the reaction would be if there was a recession or a economic correction?
I think people always get hurt.
Okay.
Recession. If you're over leveraged, you're going to get hurt. If you're, and all that means is that your values dip below what you owe,
mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a real problem. And there will be. In that event, there will be more foreclosures because money was cheap, so you borrowed as much as you could borrow.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be, who knows? Unfortunately, these things tend to cascade. They don't happen. There's not a drip
instant,
and a drab.
Yeah.
It's like a fall off a cliff, because all of a sudden, and this is why we watch the smart money. We watch the high end of the market, and as I mentioned before, the high end of the market's weak, which is always a predictor. Now, that's high end of the market's been weak for a few years, so it's not like this is anything new. But if that starts to dip precipitously,
mm-hmm.
in other words, let's say I've got a $3 million house and I've been had on the market for 2 years, I can't sell the damn thing, and I say, you know, geez, Avery, just get rid of the damn thing.
Yeah.
What do I need to sell it for, Avery, to get the thing sold? And you say, well, I can dip it to two. But all my neighbors still think their house is worth three.
Three, yeah.
So they get panic-stricken. Okay?
Yeah.
And so do the lenders. Okay?
Yeah.
You get panic stricken. So now you start getting a lot of nervousness. And so there will be a lot of nervousness, and for good reason. Because real estate tends to lead the recession and into the recession and lead out of the recession.
Yeah. And EQ plays a big part in people's decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of switching gears, if somebody was to shadow you, what would be the thing that you want them to take away from the day? What would the pieces that they...
Well, I guess it would be to understand the importance of the relationships that we have inside our business. We have a vision, a mission, like every business should have. Mm-hmm. We've got a set of core values that we, you know, believe in deeply. But our core competency is relationship building, and I'd want them to see how important that is. For example, I've got in my briefcase here probably 30 birthday cards. I sign birthday cards to everybody in the company every day. And I, you know, if I remember something about Avery, I'll make it as personal as I can make it. Some of these people I don't know. Mm-hmm. We have 1,700 agents, and we've got 330 employees. So you know, it's 2,000 people. I can't know them
all. You can't know them
all. But, you know, I do try to know as many as I can, and I get the numbers so I know how Avery's doing, and I can, you know, if I see that he's had a recent sale or something, I'll try to make a comment about it. But I would hope that they would see the relationships, the importance of relationships inside the company,
okay. And
also the importance of our relationships to our customers. I think that's undervalued in our industry because the industry has deferred those relationships to the agents themselves. And I would want a person sharing me to see that, but I'd also want them to see how important those relationships are to me personally. I spend a lot of time, as much time as I can, directly with our clients. Not as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
Because we've got various categories of clients, corporate clients, builder clients, developer clients, single family home buyers and sellers, and we've got property owners for our property management company. And you know, there's nothing more valuable than just helping people to feel important, and that's what we try to do. Like tonight, we had a holiday party scheduled that was going to be in one of our offices for the whole company, and our general manager didn't get enough response, so he decided to cancel it. And he told me this yesterday. I said, first of all, real estate agents don't respond.
Okay? Yeah. So
that's no indication. They would have come. Or, yeah. And if they didn't come, who cares? You know, that's their loss.
Yeah.
So I decided this morning that we're going to go to a restaurant, and I'm going to buy everybody drinks. You know, so we're going to
have a good time.
I said, I want to see these people. I want to talk to them. I want to hear what's on their mind. And I'd hope that somebody would also see that what I do to meet with our people. I meet with a group of our people from every region every month.
Mm-hmm.
I call them my senior advisors, and they can say anything they want. You know, I take notes. I had a meeting here with our people yesterday and listened dutifully. And I also run my trial balloons by them. I say, you know, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think? Mm-hmm. They'll tell me I'm crazy, or they'll tell me it's a good idea. Or, but it's interesting stuff.
Okay. Two more questions, mm-hmm. if you have time.
Sure.
What would be the common misconception people have about what you do or what your company stands for?
Real easy. They think it's easy, number one. It isn't.
Yeah.
Okay, right? You know
yeah.
that. they think that, you know, just because somebody told them they might be good at real estate that they should jump into this business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it concerns me that the perception of this business is that it's easy money. It's not. My father told me a long time ago, this business is very simple, but it's not easy. And he was 100% right. It is a simple business. Buyers want to buy, sellers want to sell. Our job is to bring them together. That's a very, very difficult process.
It's simple, yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
There's some 17 service providers that have to be brought into that process, which is very difficult to do, just mm-hmm. to coordinate all that. And so people underestimate that when they look at our business.
I got you. And then would there be anything like you'd want the people to know in terms of like advertising things about you specifically?
Well, I would say this.
Takeaways?
That we've been at this a long time,
okay.
That we consider this to be a learning culture and a culture of innovation. And we want to stay on the forefront of this. And I think there's far too many people in our business that want to sit there and wait for people to call them and wait for leads to drop in their lap and drive them around until the customer says, "I'll buy that one." And so we want people to know that we work hard at this company, and we're trying to provide not just good service, but the very best service, exceptional service, which is a very difficult thing to define, but we do define it. And we put it right in writing. We tell people the same thing every time. You're not happy with our service, you're out of your contract immediately. No questions asked. You don't need to tell us why.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, we want to make sure, and that's my grandfather, it was always his belief, and it's ours too to this day.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you guys for tuning in. I really appreciate it. You can always find us on any of our social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at DIHYA_talks. Hopefully you liked what you